Global Law with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome. This is episode 128 of the Robots Podcast. I am Jana, and today we will hear from Pericle Salvini from the Arts Lab in Italy about robot ethics and robo-law. But first, as always, let's have a listen to the latest news and developments in robotics with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. This week was the US National Robotics Week, featuring more than 190 robotics events, demonstrations and workshops in the 50 states. The goal of the week was to encourage and inspire the next generation of innovators in science, technology, engineering and math. As part of the event, Stanford hosted a gigantic robot block party, organized by Silicon Valley Robotics and the Stanford Robotics Club. Other events included robot block parties in Chicago and Houston, multiple first regional competitions, a robot comedy show, a cloud robotics hackathon, and many, many workshops, movies, educational tours, robotics courses, webinars, and open house days, among other events. RoboHub participated by publishing a special 15-part series focused on robots and jobs, which coincided with the Exconomy Forum Robots Remake the Workplace, organized this week by SRI International. In other news, Australian billionaire Clive Palmer is extending his real-life Jurassic Park with another 117 animatronic dinosaurs. The eccentric billionaire, who is also behind the plans to recreate the Titanic, has already installed a real life-size T-Rex in his Palmer Coolum Golf Resort. Photos show another dinosaur, a 20-meter-long, 3.5-meter-high Deinosuchus, currently undergoing final construction in China. The next shipment will also include a 1,200-kilogram Brachiosaurus and a 7-meter-tall Momenchisaurus, both tall plant-eating reptiles. For more information on this week's news, including the many events during the U.S. National Robotics Week's RoboHub series on robots and jobs, and an eccentric billionaire's plan to create a robotic Jurassic Park, have a look at robohub.org.
The Advanced Robotics Technology and Systems, or Arts Lab, at Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna in Pisa, Italy, is dedicated to research on robotics and bioengineering. Among other projects, the Arts Lab integrates scientific and humanistic disciplines in order to study the theoretical and practical problems linked to the development of robotics. Dr. Pericle Salvini has a background in foreign languages and literature, but has since moved on to conduct research in the field of human-robot interaction. Our reporter Per spoke to Pericle about the social and ethical issues associated with advances in robotics, and about the RoboLaw project, which was presented at this year's European Robotics Forum.
So today I'm here with Pericle Salvini from Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna in Pisa, Italy. And we're going to talk about ethical issues within robotics. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners? What is your background?
My education is in the humanities. I come from, to be more precise, foreign languages and literature, and I specialize on a thesis on theater and new technologies. And here you can start to see the connections. So at that time, I really worked into the theater, and I thought that the theater could be improved by relying on new technologies. And I was much more focused on digital technologies, not really robotics. But then after the graduation, I went to spend a period abroad in the UK, and there I started a master of research in theater studies, of course, and my tutor proposed me to deal with telepresence art. And here I met and I started to study artists like Eduardo Katz from Brazil. He is doing many kinds of art, and one of them is robotic art. He wrote a beautiful essay on robotic art, and he's doing also things with genetics, with all the new technologies. And another one was a British guy, Paul Sermon. He was doing telepresence art. He was doing, putting people together in a screen, basically. Very interesting. And the other one was one of the father of communication art, if you want, was Roy Ascott. So during this period, I really started to found and to study artists working with different kinds of technologies, including robotics. And there was this artist, I don't remember the name, who was dealing with biorobotics. But for him, biorobotics was just having a biological entity, so a cockroach basically, on a robot and doing experiments with this cockroach, controlling the robot. That was, for him, biorobotics. Then I finished with the theater. I decided to go back to Italy for different reasons. And I found that in my place, near my place, there was this call for applications for a PhD in biorobotics. At that time, I didn't know that biorobotics was inspired by nature, robot inspired by nature. I understood biorobotics for what I learned before, you know, this connection between biological entities, more bionics, if you want. Anyway, to make it more quicker and simple, I had the chance to apply and I won the place because at that time the Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna, the institute where I'm working now, was looking for not an engineer but a person with a background in philosophy and humanities, because they were having, let me say, problems, if you want, on ethical issues in their projects. So basically the European Commission had asked them to modify one of their proposals for having a grant because of ethical issues. And since they are mainly roboticists, they didn't know how to deal with these ethical issues. So they needed input from other field of knowledge. Before me, there was a philosopher of science working there, but he finished. So I arrived at the exact time, at the exact moment, and I got in. And I started to work, had a big opportunity to work in this laboratory of robotics, to have colleagues, fantastic colleagues, that gave me the possibility to talk and to freely say what I thought and help them to solve these issues. And, you know, Professor Paolo Dario is a very open-minded person, very interdisciplinary. And so I'm still there and I'm still doing this 7 years now since I've arrived there working on the ethical, legal and social issue of robotics. Mm-hmm. That's how the story is.
So that's how you got there. And then now you're focusing on social, ethical and legal issues within robotics, when we implement them, how we introduce them into society. Should we start? I think there's social, ethical and then legal in that order, because first, we define the social problem, and from that comes the ethical. Or is it ethical, social, legal?
Yeah, that's interesting, because nobody, as far as I know, has ever put some order into this ELS or LC issues.
Yeah. I guess legal comes last, because we have to have an ethic to make law.
I agree with you. As far as I see the thing is that you should first have considered the social impact of a technology. So really to carry on experiments on how a certain technology impacts at different levels on human beings, on the environment, on everything. Then you have to consider the results of what you have done from the point of view of ethics. I mean, if this technology have these negative effects, but also these positive effects, you know, what is ethical? Is it right or wrong to use it? So it's a sort of balancing pros and cons against a framework, an ethical framework, which in Europe, in my opinion, is the Charter of Fundamental Rights. It should be so, basically. then if it's ethical, then you go to lawyers and basically say, listen, there's a gap. We need to fill this gap. This robot needs to circulate on the roads. I'm making an example. And that's how I see. So social, ethical, and legal.
Yeah, yeah. So the social problem, can you give us a good example of a robot having a social problem when it's been introduced? One of your projects having a social problem or an issue that they're facing, and how you solved it, if you did?
Okay, I see two sorts of social problems. One is the one which depends on how we human beings are using technology. And I will make an example soon. And the other one is on how technologies is influencing us indirectly. So one is a direct and the other is an indirect way. So how we use technology and what is a social problem. For instance, there is this, the problem of robots and workplaces. Many people, especially workers, but also researchers, think that robots are killing jobs, basically. And some other people think that this is not true. They are increasing, and in the short period, maybe, then in the long period, you know, there is equilibrium again. Anyway, this is, I think, a social issue for roboticists and robotics, affecting robotics in general. And yes, I mean, another social issue which is now related to the indirect ways in which technology affect human beings is, for instance, to consider the ways in which we are changing. We as human beings, our values, our habits, our for instance, there is a big issue about military robotics. If it's right or not to allow robots to kill human beings, but and this is one thing, is an issue. Of course, it's relevant. But on the other hand, now we know that the way that in which we fight wars are changing. We know that now soldiers are fighting wars from a distance, using drones, controlling, teleoperating drones from the some base in the United States, for instance, and controlling drones far away. So what happened is that these soldiers are carry on a normal lives. They are having breakfast with their family, and then they are going out to work, which means that they are sitting down to a console station, looking at the screen, controlling a drone somewhere in the world, and probably also killing somebody using that drone. And it has been pointed out that this has provoked serious problems, psychic problems to these soldiers. So this is a way in which, you know, in this case, robotic technologies, but telecommunication technologies in general are affecting us. They allowed us to act at a distance, and acting at a distance can create what is called moral disengagement and abstraction. So there is also consequences on responsibility. And these are also very, in my opinion, important social issues that should be considered. Mm-hmm. Besides or not using, is it good to use robots to, autonomous robots to kill human beings?
And also for the soldier then, living this dual life of switching between the war environment and the regular environment every day, rather than as it was historically, where we went to war, we were gone for 2 years, we lived through all the horrors of war much more practically than running a drone. But even if you see these killings and you do kill people yourself, and then you come home at the end of the day, that must be a totally new challenge for the armed services to help the soldiers cope with this, as you said, psychologically. And these guys have to do that twice a day. They have to join the war once in the morning, and then they leave work and come to the regular environment, and they do that. Must be very, very, a very new situation.
A new situation, yeah. And we need to be prepared to face it. And to consider the consequences.
Yeah.
Because in the end, I mean, this sort of technologies extend our the power to act in the world, but at the same time, they stay in between us, in between us as human being and what we are doing somewhere else. So there is also a distance.
Yeah.
At the same time, they bring closer things to us, but at the same time, they shield us from the thing. It seems also that they enhance our presence in the world. In fact, there are many colleagues and scientists that are calling telepresence technologies. But in actual fact, real presence is something different. It's what you said. If you are a soldier and you are fighting, real presence is listening to the noise and of war, and smelling the smell of blood, you know. And although we have good, high resolution screens and auditory feedback and whatever, some channels of communication that are linking us with the reality, the distant reality, are blocked, stopped.
Yeah, it's lost. The autonomous killing vehicles, or if it's drones or robotics or something like that, is a very challenging issue, of course, because if we're saying that, that really comes down to the question, should we have armed forces or not? Because then, of course, we cannot say, well, we shouldn't have robotic killing vehicles, but we should put a soldier there instead. Yeah, but then that soldier might be you, and you don't want to be killed. If it was you that needed to go, you would much rather stay home running the drone.
Sure.
Because being a soldier, especially in these, like, we have a lot of peacekeeping missions for the United Nations, for instance. They put themselves at a great risk doing that.
Yeah,
and quite a lot of them are killed in the line of duty, so to speak. And so we cannot just say we should have no robots soldiers, because we actually need soldiers now and then. So that's, it's not either or, but it's how we do it, how do we regulate it, and what happens to the information generated when we have these drones. And that's actually a big difference between robotic warfare and regular warfare, is that since everything is transmitted through telepresence, everything can also be recorded.
Hmm.
And what happens to that recording? I mean, if somebody does something wrong, in a regular war, nobody would be around to see it. But in a telepresence war, it's recorded and it's kept there for posterity.
This is interesting because, we are talking about autonomous robots and that can kill people. There is this. We don't have to think about humanoid robots dressed like soldiers or like Terminators. We just have to think about a cruise missile, which is perfectly an autonomous, in my opinion, robot. So what happened with cruise missiles when they first came out during the Gulf War, they were advertised as, you know, the latest and perfect weapon, if you want, because they were surgical, precise, very precise, and casualties were limited. But instead, what happened often also, I'm afraid to say, is that the cruise missiles many times missed the target and went on a civil target. So they were a mistake.
Whether that depends happened on technical errors or information errors.
They were called collateral accidents. This is interesting because in some way I'm thinking I've never investigated this issue further, but this issue of collateral accident is nothing less than a way to avoid responsibility. Because what you said, that everything should be recorded, is true. We have that possibility. But have you ever heard of a soldier or somebody being sued for a cruise missile that went wrong?
No, probably not.
No.
But so our laws could be changed to update for that, saying that any sensor input from a robot, and this doesn't have to be a robot in a war, it can be any robot, should be stored for later review. But then that's actually a question I talked to another person about. Say that you have a cleaning robot or a robot operating in a hospital, and it has a camera because it's for some reason it needs a camera, and it cleans a room in the hospital where there is a patient. Should we then store that video, or should we discard it? Because the patient has a right to privacy when they're treated at a hospital.
Sure.
But there might also be evidence in there of neglect or ill treatment or any issues. But if we store the video, it can also get into the wrong hands, and this
sure.
patient's
sure.
privacy can be violated.
Yeah, but...
So should we store the video or should we discard the video? That's my question.
That's an interesting question. Well, you could solve the issue by putting signs on the room saying that there is a robot having a camera that is recording.
So we can let the patient choose.
So informed consent, basically.
Yeah.
What is happening in the area where there is a surveillance systems. You know that there are cameras and you accept by staying there their presence. But of course, is it right? Is it ethically right or wrong? I mean, I wouldn't like the idea of having a robot with a camera in my house. It's difficult because suppose you are an elderly person and you need a robot, and so you need the robot has cameras, and somebody arrives, a friend of yours arrives, mm-hmm. and knock on the door, and the robot opens the door with a camera, is still recording and recording the outside. So it's really it's really tricky. I mean, how to solve this?
But and in many cases, if the robot did it, it opens the door and records. I mean, checks is this person really who they're saying they are. With the camera, and it then does that by filming outside to the street.
Sure.
That might not even be legal today.
Yeah.
Because you cannot put up surveillance cameras willy-nilly.
Yeah, exactly. So that's an issue. That's an issue that has to be regulated.
Mm-hmm. So you work then with kind of sorting these kinds of issues out, and do you then prepare them for the legislature? Or how? Now we've looked at the social issues and we've looked at the ethical problems. How do we transfer this into law?
Okay, so we haven't talked about this project, the RoboLaw project, which is a recently founded research project from the European Commission. It started in March 2012, and it's about regulating emerging robotic technologies. So at the end of this project, in February 2014, we as the consortium are supposed to produce a document called Guidelines for Regulating Robotic Technologies to the European Commission. And these guidelines are meant to help the Commission to draft a white book on robotic technologies, on regulating robotic technologies. So that's basically the answer to your question. We are now working together with basically lawyers, many lawyers, but also philosophers, so ethicists basically, and roboticists, in order to collect all the necessary information for producing this document. And we are now in the phase of recruiting inputs from stakeholders, collecting inputs from stakeholders. What I mean is that in order to have this document ready, we need to talk to all the robotic stakeholders. I mean, we need to talk to robotic companies, from companies that are designing and developing robots for surgery, from those that are more interested in logistics, whatever. And users, so patients in case of robotic surgery, but also surgeons is a sort of user, a professional user, but also with what I call standby, which are the people that have to coexist with the technology, even though they are not using, because maybe they don't want to use these robots, but they will find them walking shoulder to shoulder on the street, maybe in the future. Mm-hmm. So,
for instance, like a street cleaning robot. And
You
have to interact with them, even if you didn't choose to.
Even if it's not a direct interaction, they have to be taken into account, these people, in my opinion, in the design of this robot. So we are now trying to create boards, stakeholder boards on different application of robots, to gather important information. And then with this information, we want to arrive at the Commission saying, this is what you know, companies are they, what they need from what companies would expect the commission to do in order to address this issue. This is what people think that they should have, and they should be, you know, for protecting them, for guaranteeing safety, security.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically you're going to condense all this information and provide a basis for the commission then to turn that into a legal document.
It will be up to the commission to decide what to do with this document.
The
idea is that we could not write a white book ourselves, because a white book is an instrument of the commission. So we are writing guidelines.
And then they will write the white book, which is
they are supposed, yes, to write it.
You mentioned that stakeholders can contribute to this work. Which kind of stakeholders are you searching for, and which are in short supply, so to speak?
So, as I said, that we are basically now trying to select the most relevant robotic applications. So, basically, we are trying to see where research is moving, but also where, you know, companies are moving. What are the robots that we will have tomorrow? In order to do this is not easy, because who knows what's happening tomorrow in the research field, what new discovery. So it's very difficult. But there is an interesting and useful methodology for carrying on out this selection, which is called the ethical triage, which is based on a former European project, the EthicBots project led by Guglielmo Tamburini. And according to this ethical triage, in order to select relevant case studies or robotic application, you have to look at the social pervasiveness of a technology. So how many people will be affected, very simply, by that technology. You have to look at the imminence of the technology, so when it will be ready, soon or later. Of course, we are interested in things that will be ready soon. And the novelty. So what kind of new ethical, legal and social issues is this technology bringing about? So this is basically how we will proceed for the selection of the robotic applications. And then we will create these boards. So let's say we are talking about surgery assisted by robots. Then we will have, companies like Intuitive Surgical, for instance, you know, or we will have surgeons, we will have patient associations, we will have insurance companies, we will have hospitals, and everyone will be given the possibility to say something. To say, for instance, companies. I know that companies are, with respect to surgical robot, they want to fill the gap that is now existing in certifications for surgical robots, because there is no rules about that. It's important to have this sort of input from the people interested in robotics.
And if some of our listeners feel out there that they want to contribute, how would they go about becoming a member of a board?
Well,
whether they are a private citizen, a representative of a group like a patient group, or a type of worker, or a company, or
yeah, we are designing now. We are in the designing questionnaires. That will be available on our project website, which is www.robolaw.eu. Mm-hmm. There will be a dedicated page to stakeholder recruitment and stakeholder board. So it will be very simple to register and you will be considered in our next meetings, or you will be sent a questionnaire.
Mm-hmm. So basically anyone can contribute, right? You don't have to be an expert in neither ethics, law or robotics. If you are a patient, if you are a potential user, you can contribute with what you can, right?
Yes. Of course, for patients and for users, we are preferring associations instead of the single person. But we don't want to remove this possibility also to have an individual opinion on that. Mm-hmm. It could be interesting.
Is there any size? I mean, many robotics companies are quite small. Is that an issue? Do you think if you have a company and you're five people, is that okay to participate as a company?
Sure. We also looking for spin-off companies. They are very relevant for us. Mm-hmm. Their opinion. Yeah. No problem.
So, and then of course this goes on to the commission. Is there anything else within robotic and robot law that you think we should talk about?
Well, it's a complex, really, is a complex subject, and yeah, of course there are many things. What I can say is that this topic should be included in, should be given more prominence in, for instance, in education, in engineers' education. It's funny because sometimes even ergonomics, which should be now, which is a part of this curricula and the education of engineers, but it's not really given so much importance. So for ethical and societal and legal issues, I guess it will be tough to arrive to get that sort of attention, but it's very important. Like ergonomics is important. I mean, human factor. How can you cannot consider human factor today? But if you look at products, if you look many of them, they seems not designed having in mind the user, the human. Yeah.
They're designed to have a look or a style, but they're not designed to be used.
Yes, exactly.
And usually, you see that the more professional a product is, the more it's designed to be used to fulfill that need that the professional user has. Because, I mean, they pay for something and they're very particular about
what they have. Yeah, that's true. And what else? I mean, I'm working in a robotics lab, but so I believe that robotics can give human beings great possibilities to advance knowledge and, you know, progress. So I don't want to be a new Luddist, of course, but I think that it's important to address these ethical and societal and legal issues to have better robots for people.
Yeah, and a better end result for everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah, and without as the surgical companies say, without a legal framework, you can't sell your robot because it's too risky.
It's a barrier. I mean, it's...
So, thank you very much for being part of the podcast. And I hope we have more to report on your progress as you have it.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
And that's it for today. If you fancy finding out more about Pericles' work, robot ethics or robo-law, there's more information on our website at robotspodcast.com. The next podcast will air in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Robo-law with robots. The podcast for news and views on robotics.